Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. And hosting with me today is my good friend, Frank DiPiero from Keeping It Real with Frankie D. And we have a great panel today to talk about writing your family story. So welcome, guys. Thanks for being here. You know, Ed, I think I'm going to start with you because I know you've written few books, and you have your short stories, and we see you. You got the camera working, so that's even better.
My computer.
So, you know, why did you start writing your family story, and is it, you know, true to life, or is it like a historical fiction type of thing?
Well, actually, it happened a few years ago. I was at a La Virginia Christmas Eve dinner and telling my children how fortunate they were to be here in this country because of my grandparents who came as immigrants and all the trials and tribulations of being an immigrant in this country and how hard they worked to get to this point. And my oldest son said, "I didn't know that." I said, "Well, you need to know that." So I wrote a story just in a journal. What do I do with this story? And I sent it to an editor of the local newspaper. He published it. He said it was charming. I said, "It's charming." So he published it. I never wrote anything before. I'm a retired physician. I used to write medical stuff, which was boring, and subject, predicate, and so forth. Anyway, he thought it was pretty good. So 5 books later, that was 10 years ago, I just wrote all these stories about growing up Italian, about my grandparents, parents, neighborhood, friends, et cetera, et cetera. A series of essays, that's what they are. And then I got a job writing for the Providence Journal, then another job for an online digital newspaper, a weekly column, and there it is. It just blew up like that.
And so, truth be told, Ed influenced me a lot to, write my story, and along with Anthony Riccio, who was a great mentor, and I like to thank Peggy. I think I helped you a little bit get started. Yeah,
big, huge. Yeah. Also, Anthony.
Yeah,
Anthony Rich. Yeah,
and so Peggy, you wrote about your grandmother mostly, right?
No, actually, all my close, my mother, my father, but my grandmother was the one who got me started because I was teaching in the junior college where I went, and I was trying to get them to talk about, just talk in class about where they came from, because I was all over the world, and what they wanted to talk about was their family. That was the big thing. So I said, okay, this is going to be our first writing assignment, it's not in the syllabus like this, but we did it. And so I gave them an exemplar of my grandmother, and it took off from there. Then it became 100 pages.
Yep.
And Josephine, your books, I guess, I know it's about the family, but you kind of, have some historical stuff in there too, yeah?
I did a lot of research. Took years. Yeah, I went to the church where my grandparents were married. That's in 1900. And they sent me all kinds of documents, all the baptisms of all my aunts and uncles and my father. So, yeah, I do have a lot of documents.
Yeah. And Becky, how about you?
Well, I'm doing something probably very different than most of the folks on the panel. So I'm carrying forward family histories that my mother and my father wrote. So my dad wrote a history of his family, of which originally started with tape recording his mom and dad and collecting all the stories that they had. And then he then also wrote his own personal story. He's similar to Ed. My dad was a physician as well. So he wrote about what it meant to be an Italian immigrant and come into a system of which there was quotas on Italians to enter medical school and all those kinds of things that entered into his story. story. And then my mother wrote her story of her family as well. And I just discovered for my brother that he has cassette tapes. I guess she did interview folks. I haven't gotten my hands on them yet. I'll be driving over soon to go get those to listen to. Well, if nothing else, to hear people's voices again as well. So I've been attempting in different avenues, which we can talk about a little later, to get the stories in places that I think are appropriate, but I'm not necessarily publishing them for the wider world.
Yeah, you'll get there.
Yeah, well, you're going to twist my arm. Okay.
Well, you have to.
I do have a children's story based on my mom's first Christmas. Well, I'd love to get out there.
Great.
Great.
And Frank, yeah. that's a good segue to you because you've actually written children's books.
Yes. Thank you. You know, they're kind of based off of the real life thing. You know, I wrote one about it's like the little girl takes her teddy bear and she goes to Italy, but it's based off of places that I went to, places. My wife is an immigrant and it's where she's from in Calabria and her town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, yeah, it's stuff like that. I'm finishing up another one now based off of my father's town in Abruzzo, and it's all about Abruzzo, and it's actually going to be bilingual because I'm a big fan of encouraging the learning of the Italian language for the, and it's easy when they're young, they can learn anything in the world. Exactly. It's harder when you don't like me. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So did everybody, cause I kind of felt it. Did everybody feel that you had, there was an outside force driving you to do this?
I think it's not wanting to have the stories be lost. Because when I think about what my, just speak to my dad's family right now, when we were little, my dad's Sicilian and my mother's Carvalese, so they spoke different dialects. So we learned no Italian as children. So when we went to my dad's parents' home and his brothers and things were there, there'd be all these talking and laughter and everything, of course, spoken in Sicilian. And later we'd have to say to Dad, why were you laughing? What was the story? And then he would relay these stories back to us. And these are some of the things he captured. Those would all be lost if he hadn't written them down. And so I feel like I have a chance to push forward to future generations the stories going back two or three generations that we would never have had. And so I think that's sort of this force of, I want to make sure they're somewhere and they don't get lost again.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's certainly why I did it, you know, for that reason.
You know, Bob, for me, it's an inside force because it becomes an emotional journey. When you start to write these stories and realize what people went through and then what you live alongside those generations, it's an emotional journey. People, when I go to book signings and people ask me to read a story, I may have written the story 100 times over, but I can't read it because it gets emotional for me. As I talk about my aunts, I'm writing about my aunts and I say, I'm sorry, I can't read it. You're going to have to buy the book. but it's an inside, more emotional for me than outside force. Yeah.
When I was doing my research, I wanted to go like further back as far as I could. When my grandfather came over with his parents in 1888, and finding the listings of the names and how some people from one village could be 50 of them on the same ship coming over. So even though they were coming over to a new country, they still had 49 other people, which is great. It's like you're on a trip with a family.
You know, a few years back, actually, probably now, like 6 years, 7 years, before I really knew anything about writing and all this stuff, I did a book from Costco, and it was mostly pictures, but the nice thing was it was like for my kids about my wife's parents. And I'm like, they do all these, they're calabrese, and they do all these things at home, and, you know, jarring tomato sauce and making wine and making sopressata and making this and making that and making this and breads. And I thought, you know, just to put it all together and find all these pictures and little captions and stuff. And my father-in-law says all these proverbs, and I wrote all the proverbs. So it's all in this one book. And I thought, I know they're not going to appreciate it now. Meaningless. But one day they're going to look at this and go, wow. And I agree with you, Ed. I was, you said it before I could say it. It's not an outer force. It's an inner force.
Yeah, it's a feeling.
Thing in your heart and your soul and your gut that says, do this, and keep doing it, keep doing it. Because it's important. It's for our families, it's for our people, it's for our culture. So, yeah.
Well, here's when you've succeeded, Frank, is when your granddaughter reads your book and invites you to her class. And you must ask her project.
That's lovely.
You got to sit down.
That's excellent. That's great.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling.
Well, and, you know, it's funny.
Go ahead.
My wife, the second book I wrote was more about my work career and everything like that. And she read it and she said, I didn't know all that stuff happened. So. Yeah.
Hello, Giuseppe.
Sure.
Is this the great Frankie D of Frankie D podcast?
Absolutely. Oh, it is.
If you have, you know, can I just interject? Because Carla Simonini, professoressa, is at the University of Loyola and holds the chair in Italian studies there. She's from Rhode Island, and I went to school with her father. And if you all have not heard the podcasts of Frankie D. DePiero with Carla Simonini about Christopher Columbus, then you all must get on and hear that story. It's remarkable. In addition to all the other stuff Frank has done on his podcasts, it will take you forever to listen to all of them, but they're great. Those especially, Frank, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I interviewed Carla once, you know, just one-on-one about her and about Loyola and the Italian Studies program. Carla's great. We're lucky to have her in Chicago.
I love Frank's stuff. He has the Italian American moment, who tells us about people that we should know, but we don't know. But here's a question that somebody has, and from John Vallejo. Have you ever written a story and found more info later that could have been included? Yes. I've been writing the same story for over 10 years. I'm afraid to say it's finished. It's never going to be finished, John. Just do it.
At some point, Amelia. Just give birth to it, so to speak. just do it. Because another pair of eyes on it might allow you, I don't know if you've had other people read it, John, but if you did that, then people might give suggestions and say, it's good here, or this, what do you mean by, and ask some questions. But at some point you do have to deliver it. You really do.
True.
And you know, also, I mean, I changed the format of mine a couple of times. I took things out, put things in, and then you just have to go with it. You could always do a second book.
And of course your first book always leads you to a second, and then your second is going to lead you to a third. That's the fun of it.
And if I may, at our Italian Cultural Center in Chicago, under the great Dominic Candeloro, always he does, they do genealogy Saturday seminars for free. How to write your own story. He's done a couple of those seminars. His family's book, a beautiful book with so much information. And they help these people how to do it. Which is just so nice and very, very useful, very, very helpful and useful.
Yeah, I think that's because I knew when I first started to gather information for my first book, I was afraid to write because I thought, I've never wrote stories before. But once you start, it just goes. your fear lets go, I think. Yeah. You no longer have fear.
Yeah, yeah, I found that too. You just have to go with it.
It's also you have a good memory.
Just wanted to bring Giuseppe in for a minute. I met Giuseppe in my grandparents' hometown, Torito, last September, and he was just amazing. He took us around, and we had such a fun time there. So, welcome, Giuseppe. Thanks for being here.
Hello. My English is not very good. I'm sorry because I speak every day Italian language with other people, but I'm sorry. I met just last year Mr. Bob at Torito, and I have honored to stay with you all the days giving the opportunity to Mr. Bob to visit his roots of Torito, and I have the pleasure to be his cicerone. You remember
Cicerone?
Certo, certo.
Whoops.
I think he froze.
He sure did.
And I'm very happy to greet you. And I think you must to transfer in Italy, in my opinion, because Italy is very beautiful. Eh? In particular, the cook. Eh? Yeah. I'm sorry for some mistake when I speak in English.
No, you're
sorry.
Doing wonderfully.
No, your English is better than our Italian, Giuseppe. Don't worry about that. That's for sure.
Bob, I think this comment by Ben on the screen is a interesting start for people to start a family tree, because I know often as you're working backwards, you do think of different stories, and some of the websites allow you to put a story up or write something, or both orally as well as written. And it's also another interesting way to possibly start, even if it's just a small story or a remembrance about a person that you have personally. So I think people could start at the family tree way of doing little pockets here and there as they go.
Well, and I think that's great. And I also think that now, I know it was, you know, we didn't do it, but, you know, like Anthony did in the 70s, for anybody young who's listening that, you know, has, you know, grandparents, or maybe even they're lucky enough to have great grandparents, record them. Sit down there with you know, everybody's got a video on their phone now.
Yes.
That's probably the best way to preserve it, whether you want to publish it as a book later on, or you just want to put it out there for everybody else to see. And my uncle's grandson did that with him. He talked to him about World War II, and it's fantastic because, you know, you're hearing his own words. Right. So, you know, that's doesn't have to necessarily, I guess, be written.
Right.
You know, just preserving the stories is what's really, really important.
Before my mother passed away, I gave her a book with a question on each page. First boyfriend, first toy, favorite school, and she filled the book.
Wow.
Here's the mistake. I have it. I should have videoed her, because she would have forgotten the video was on, and the video of her in her home telling those stories would have been. So what my brother and I did is exactly that. Someone asked us all those questions. His son is a videographer, so he took all the old pictures and put them in the video as we spoke about those people. Mm-hmm. And now it's indelible, and it's digitized, so everybody can look at it anytime. It's not a, you know, you don't have to pass it around. So that's something to think about for the old timers, especially to get those things recorded.
And
that's a great idea.
What year was your mother born in?
Sorry?
What year was your mother born in?
1911, yeah. So she lived through the Depression. She had all those stories and, you know, and of her parents. So they were great stories. And
she was born here in America, or in Italy?
No, she was born here in America.
She was born here in America.
So in the book, she never punctuated anything. So the book is one sentence.
Yes, of course.
In the middle of the running, she might put X's and O's to tell me that she loved me. But other than that, it was one sentence.
That's nice.
Bob, is maybe to build off Ed's, I don't know if you want to show my slide. I can talk about a couple things when he said not necessarily publishing, because that's what I've been trying to do with my stuff. So I'll just talk about a few that are up here. So one was, we did a family cookbook and asked for recipes that people remembered, but then we also have in it poetry written by family members. We have stories written about different events that are interspersed in the cookbook. And then we distributed it through cousins and aunts and uncles and did that. My mom's first Christmas in the country is called One Small Wish. And we did that, my sister and I and one of my first cousins, Christine, we worked on the story and the illustrations of that. And then we made books again for the family. But then I've also latched on to opportunities. So for me, this is an opportunity presenting today. Or I did a podcast with Bob a while ago about my paternal grandparents is another way of sharing just a small little taste of it. And then I'm from Akron, Ohio, and they were doing, that just happened to come, believe me, it was 2 weeks to closure. And for some reason, because I'm no longer living in Northern Ohio, I'm in Central Ohio, I didn't even know this project was going on, but something came on my Facebook and they were collecting information. They put up a statue of a rubber worker in Akron. We're going to lay bricks. So I made sure that my grandfather, my great uncle, and a great aunt who worked in the rubber industry had bricks, but they were also sharing stories. And so I was recorded. I don't know what'll happen with that story, but again, just another opportunity to do that. And the only published piece, which is an interesting work, is by a researcher teacher in Turin, Pina Mafuto, who has been studying Cardovili, where my mom is from. And on the cover of this book, which is number 4, that's actually my family. That's my great-grandfather. So she chose, and I'll be emotional because I'm really surprised. We sent pictures anyway to be part of the book, and this became the cover. But she wanted to know about second generation. And so I interviewed my mom while she was alive, got things, and then my brothers and sister and I did that. And so she has published this, and recently it'll be coming out in English. So I have a copy in Italian, and it's not good, very good for me. But there's about 12 families that did information. So to look for small or big opportunities out there as another way of telling aspects of your family's stories.
Thanks for that, Becky. And you know, it came up before and I forgot to mention that there are, I interviewed one person and it escapes me, but there's another one that I'm doing in another couple of weeks. There are, if you don't want to write the story yourself, or you don't have the time, there are places out there on the internet that you can go to, and you give them the information and they'll do a draft for you. You know, some of them, if you want to publish it, they'll publish it. So, you know, for people who are, you know, really shy about it or don't think they can write, there are other opportunities out there to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Hey Frank, I'm going to let you take the reins here for a while. If that's okay. We're going to have the good podcast and now ask some questions.
Yeah, okay. Do you want me to go off of we didn't get to some of these questions that we Okay. Can we talk about how everyone gathered the facts and for the stories or no? Did we discuss that?
Well, I think a little bit, depending on who was speaking.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you how I found it.
Yes.
Fortunately, my mother kept everything. She was born in Italy. She came here when she was 5 years old, 1917. And everything she kept. So I have like birth records that were never opened, you know, that they people think they're fake, but they're not. Ancestry.com for me wasn't that useful for my family because we were more in Italy than we were here. So, but then, of course, we have a wonderful site in Italy, which is free. And I got a lot of information out of that. It's a little tough to navigate, but once you know how to do it, you know, it's very informative. And it also leads you to other people because, you know, it'll have mother and father and all of that. And probably all used Ante Nati. So that's the one I would recommend for everybody to go on. But then, you know, I found interesting things where you could just go to our main newspaper in Boston, the Boston Globe. And I type in my last name, Ficillo, maybe a couple of first names, and all of a sudden all this stuff pops up. And I put my street in the North End, and I find out that our tenement had a fire in it. I never knew that. And so these things come out of the blue that nobody told me in my family. And we owned the building from 1893 when it was built till 1959. So, but we didn't, nobody passed it down that in 1929 there was a fire. And I think that's probably why my mother was very concerned about fire escapes, because we lived in a tenement in the North End, four floors. So also, I think some people are just naturally curious and might want to just delve into it. I mentioned it on one of the podcasts. I have a cousin who's like, knows everything about the family like I do. And then his brother, no. And then, excuse me. His sister, no, and or his mother. So I think it's sometime passed down because my mother was very, you know, I learned so much from my mother. And even with the World War II, because she was very active in the community for getting people to become citizens because of, you know, what was happening with the alien deportation. So she was you know, she's probably up there someplace now saying, good job, Peggy, you know. You didn't call me Peggy, but, you know.
Hey Peggy, where was your mom from in Italy?
Where Arola.
Where is that?
In between Caserta and Benevento. Okay, so Campania, provincia Campania. My father was from Abalino. Chiusano.
Peggy, a viewer asked what Italian genealogy site you were using.
Ante Nati.
Oh, the Ante Nati files.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. No, because I use them too.
I have a screenshot thing here someplace that I have on my desktop, and also how to access it.
Yes.
It can get a little confusing.
It can.
And it comes, you know, some of it is in English or whatever language you speak. But once you get, obviously, to the
record,
the record is in interesting script. So, yeah, but I really feel that having a person in your family that was interested in the history of the family would be beneficial, because I wouldn't know half of what I know if it weren't for my mother. And she was... She was bilingual. Like somebody was talking about, Frank, you were talking about that. I can speak a lot of language. I'm like multilingual, and I can't add or subtract. You know, I'm totally going side brain. So that's really important. And she made it. What she didn't make it was just it happened. We spoke Italian in the house. And I'm interested, maybe Frank, at some point talking about Loyola, because I didn't know that, and I went to Jesuit school, I should know this. But I'm interested now in the dialects, because we, Bob knows this, you know, the idea that, or somebody also mentioned the Sicilian versus where we lived right next to the Sicilian community. Well, you know, people would come on the same boat and go live at a certain place in the North End. So our dialect from Avellino is mixed with Sicilian. Huh. And my grandmother, and it's in my book, you know, she would, oh, you're from the Benevento. Oh, that's nice. Oh,
you. He may be your cousin.
So it was, I lost my train of thought. I got so excited when I saw what was I saying? Anything important? I don't know.
You were saying that the Sicilians, they all came.
Yeah, so my grandmother would talk to me, and I was with my grandmother all the time because my mother worked, my father worked. And she'd say something to me, and I'm little. I don't even know what it is, but I've incorporated it into what I think Italian is. You go and speak that to somebody else, and they're looking at you like, you, who, what are you speaking? And I still didn't know. And I'll go down to the North End, which I'm there like, well, three times a week, and I'll hear a word that my grandmother said, and then immediately, you know, grab the people and say, what does that word mean to you, you know? And so I started working on, when I did my book, I put a lot of, language, by the way, is Napolitan. That's a real language. Right? Not a dialect, a language. I have to correct people on that. No.
Frank, but,
I want that, I want to be able to go someplace and really have that as a thing in terms of the Italian heritage, because where I'm from in the North End, we're mostly all Southern Italians, mostly from Campania and Calabria, and also, I'm reading these things. But the Sicilian is very, because I could answer that question there. Sicilian is a mixture because of the different places that control it.
Okay, so I grew up here in Barres. Yeah. So Giuseppe, tell us something in Barres.
Me? Giuseppe?
Yeah.
But you say
Italiano.
Say in Barres dialect.
C'è un fat.
Dialetto. If you want, I can talk with you in a in dialect of Bari.
Yeah.
Ma una ciccia, ma nina, c'è una stimato. Ma c'è più tardi giovedì, ma ne mangiamo qualche. Non mangiamo chi disso. Io richiedo chi ci mette rap, no? Yes, I like when I talk. In a dialect of Torito, of Bari, no, we have some different dialect in Apulian region, in particular in a province of Bari, no. For example, in Altamura, no, Altamura has a particular accent when the people speak in a dialect, no. Namaji, for example, no, let's go, Namaji, in Altamura. Say, for example, in Bari, Namashi or Shamanin. Oh, there is the accent is very different, but we are able to understand, no, in our province of Bari. But I like that you speak in Italian, no, if you want. I don't know if you. You are able to talk in Italian in this moment, no? Or you understand only the dialect, not Italian language, I think, no?
Well, you know, what's funny, Giuseppe, is when I grew up, I heard Barese, but I thought it was Italian. I didn't know that my grandparents were speaking a dialect. I just thought it was Italian because everybody said they were Italian.
Yes.
And I'd like to introduce Mirella. We got kind of confused on the times.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
She wrote about her family and from her Italian family who migrated to England. There you go. Mm-hmm. And she's got a fantastic story. Mirella, why don't you give us a brief, what your family story is about and, when they migrated to England.
Okay. So the story is based on my parents as they were children during World War II. And it's about the invasion of their village in San Pietro in Fina, which is between Rome and Naples. It's a tiny little village.
That's a good place.
So it's about their story as children when the village got invaded and how they managed, how they coped with it. So my father was 6 years old and my mother was 4 years old. Wow. And it just, there's little stories in there of my mum, my grandmother died, her mum died just after the war. She stepped on the landmine. So just stories that captivate you. And I was told these stories as a child. And so it tells of post-war, pre-war, and when my parents immigrated to London. My dad, 1959, my mum, 2 years after. So my mum passed away 11 years ago, but my dad still lives in London. He's 87 this year.
Mirella, during the occupation, did your family stay in the town or did they leave?
They did. Yeah, they did. They stayed in the village. It was occupied by the Germans. Yeah. They hid in the caves just nearby. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's how they survived. Most of them.
Many families lived in the hills. Many families in southern Italy lived in the hills during
the village was it was on a mountain.
Yeah.
And then amongst the mountains are caves where they were hiding.
Yeah.
Quite a small little book, but it's got a lot of detail in there.
It's a great book, and it's a sad story for sure. Definitely.
Yeah, but it's got a happy ending. It's got a happy
ending. It does have a happy ending, yeah. It does.
Our parents moved over to England, and yeah.
What region is your family from, Mirella?
In Italy or?
In Italy.
Yeah, so we're in between Rome and Naples, near Monte Cassino.
Mm.
We had a casino, so we're just a few miles away from there. Yeah, so when they invaded the village, they invaded Monte Cassino soon after.
So do you consider them to be Napolitan or what?
Yeah, Napolitano, yeah.
Okay.
So our dialect is very Napolitano. Sort of almost like our English version where I was brought up is the East End of London. So it's a Cockney, our dialect. Is Cockney. So it's
Cockney.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, it took me 3 years to write. It's only 100 pages, but it took me a while.
Sure.
And I had to find the evidence, so all the dates that I was given of when my grandfather was proscribed in the war.
So that's true. That's all true in that book, is what you're saying?
Yeah. It's all nonfiction.
That's a lot of work.
What's the name of the book?
Through a Child's Eyes. Mm-hmm. So the picture at the front here, this one is my mum.
Oh, pretty.
And then that's her cousin at the back. They both lost their mums. This was during Angelina during the invasion, and my mum Antonia just after.
Very nice.
So all this image here is from John Huston, the film director.
Yeah.
He filmed the village after the war. That's where I've got the photographs from. Yeah. And then you've got one inside. I don't know if you can see that clearly. There's a picture of a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just here. So that's my parents, both of the parents that John Huston took, the film footage. And above that is my parents in the 60s when they moved to England.
Yeah,
I think that's quite, is that clear? Can you see it?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a village at the back when it was, just after the war. You see it's the
Church. Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah. And there's a picture of me all dressed up there. That's the back picture.
Ah, you were beautiful. That's a gorgeous photo.
Now, you see, Mirella, had you not written that story, that would be lost forever, probably.
That's right, yes.
And you're into how many generations now from that time? Here, we're into fourth, fifth, sixth generations.
Right.
And these young people know nothing about this. They don't even know about the Holocaust, some of these kids. So if we don't record this, and Frank talks about it all the time on his podcast, Bob is talking about it, it's lost. Not now, but forever. Right. It's lost forever. And that's why you have to record it. Even if it's just in a diary for yourself, it has to be written or videoed, but recorded. I'll say one other thing, because it looks like you did some homework there. But not to forget the libraries and the librarians. They are terrific. They want to help you do your research. So be sure to go to the local libraries, because they have access to all the libraries in the country, in the world, as a matter of fact. And I've gotten a lot of help from them in some of my work.
The sad thing about it is that as children, when we went to school and they gave us our history lessons, they didn't have any of this in our history books.
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
Well, there's plenty of history about things we don't like to see about Italians. There's plenty of that.
It is what it is.
Not about our culture.
Right.
No, but it takes a creative teacher, because even today's history books are not going to cover these local important stories to what the people have experienced. And it's a creative teacher who invites their students to bring something in and to talk to people in the family and begin to look at it at that personal level instead of somewhere out there, whatever the event happens to be.
I agree with you about that. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I as a child, always used to go to San Pietro with my parents and my sisters. And I was told early on about what happened during the invasion. So it's embedded in my memory. And then as I got older and I had my own children, I started to write all the stories down so that I wouldn't forget. And my stories have passed on to my daughters, my nieces, my nephews.
Right.
Because I think it's important.
Important
to see it as my point of view going there, and my parents' point of view.
Mm-hmm. When my family came over, they all came to South Philadelphia, the grandparents and the parents from both sides. And in South Philadelphia, which happens to have the oldest Italian open market in America, and that area, down in that area, was Irish when the Southern Italians came. And the Irish said to the Italians, "We're moving out. We're going to give it to you." So, and there's a lot of Italians down there. But we had to stay within that area. We couldn't branch out into other areas because we weren't welcome.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of years to go through all that.
That happened in Brooklyn. The Italians weren't allowed in. They weren't allowed to go to the Irish church.
Yeah.
And they had to get their own church.
We had to get our own church. We built our own Italian church, Our Lady of Good Counsel, for the Southern Italians. And there is a copy of my grandparents' marriage. And underneath is another couple on the same day getting married. And they were an Irish couple. And I thought, wow, we let the Irish come in and get married there, which was great in 1900. Do you know what I mean? But that was strictly for Italians there.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice. Mm. I love our history.
Yeah, my father was welcomed. He was welcomed in London. He came over in 1959, and his first job was in a hospital for mentally ill patients. And he said that he was really blessed, that his colleagues were really good to him. They looked after him. He lived on the complex. And he said that he was one of the fortunate ones. Mm. And, you know, he couldn't speak English. His English was terrible back then. But he said he got on with it, and he got on with everything because his colleagues were really kind to him. And that's how he started, 1959, working in the hospital. And he did really well. He did really well for himself. And when my mum came over in 1962, she couldn't speak English. Yeah. But they had a beautiful accent with the Italian.
Ciao, Giuseppe.
I
think that's an important point because, you know, we all love our culture. And you know, I know the reason I do this and why Frank does this and, like, you know, Anthony did it and why, you know, Michael Cavalieri does the things that we do is because they just don't portray us the right way. We have to tell our own story because we somehow, somewhere along the line, we got stereotyped into these, you know, people that just like to shout at each other, you know.
But it's a vocal tune, isn't it? We like to, I talk with my hands, so my hands flip about everywhere. You know, we have got a lovely culture. We have, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but in the back of the book is traditional, oh gosh, can you see it? Traditional recipes. The jarred recipes of tomato sauce, melanzane. And that's keeping up with the culture of cooking, which I think is important. It's another
nothing
thing.
Like Italian food.
You can't go wrong with Italian food.
That was funny. You said, I want to blow my own trumpet. We said, yes. Oh, <"Lord."
Lord." laughs> Yeah.
Mirella, you're in England. Do you go to Italy often? You're a lot closer than us.
Yes. Italy is about 26 hours driving, or you can be there in 2 hours. So we're very fortunate that we're not far. We can just jump on a plane and go there for the weekend. So we are very, very fortunate.
That's great. You can even say jumping in the car. It just sounds crazy.
That's something we can do.
That Italy was either Canada or Mexico. Because then you could just go for the weekend. It would be, and I think that as Italian Americans, we would have a better bond with it if it was so geographically close. So that's the problem for maybe Italian Americans, some of them, is, you know, you got to get on a plane and it's a long ride to get there. So it scares people.
So how long would it be for you to get there then?
Well, from Chicago to Rome, it's about 8 hours.
Yeah.
That's not too bad.
And that's direct. So if you've got any layover, it could be 10. And then that's Rome. So now if your family's from, you know, Calabria, now you got to wait, take another flight or take a train. So it's a long, long day.
Frank, it's worth it.
Oh, it's
it is. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I'm just saying in general, it does, you know, if we were located like England and I could drive a car 24 hours,
Europeans are lucky because they're so close to Italy is right next to France. You can hop to all these different countries. We don't have that here, except Quebec Canada or Mexico. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was lucky when I was younger as a teacher. My dog gets upset. I had summers off, so to speak, you know, the teachers would be, and I would go to see my relatives in Italy for the summer. So that really opened my eyes also to how people, how we're so materialistic here. And people there at the time in the 70s and 80s were still washing clothes in the center of town in a fountain. And I'm like, okay, so no washing machine. Everybody had a TV. My aunt didn't, and this is 70s and 80s. They didn't have a telephone. Everybody was happy. They all knew each other, and they all took care of each other. And that doesn't exist hardly at all in the States.
I'm sorry. Can I just say something? I'm really, really sorry. But my dad is 87. I said he's at my niece's house watching us all. Can I just show you a video of him? So you saw the little picture of him. He's watching us.
I can't. My dad is here. He's watching us live.
Well, that's great. That's fantastic.
Well, that's my dad.
Can
you see that?
Can I say one thing, Bob, about this culture, which is so great? I give a lot of presentations to Italian-American historical societies and to libraries that have some cultural exhibitions about Italy and Italian culture. And I see a lot of people there, but what I don't see are young people. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be some way in the National Italian American Foundation. If you're not members, you ought to look at membership. It's not expensive. I'm making a giant push to get young people involved with scholarships, education, and some kind of involvement locally and nationally. And that's what we need to do to continue this story. They like to go to Italy, you know, they're in school and they take a semester and they go and they come back and forget. What they're forgetting is the giant leap that was made from immigrants to their opportunity today. And so we shouldn't really, we shouldn't forget that, but to get them involved. There's one society where I saw them involved and they were enthusiastic. Once they learned about the history, the culture, the food, the geography, all that you're talking about, that's so critical to our culture. And I'm sick and tired of them watching all those crazy shows. I mean, The Godfather set us back years. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible movie, I believe, in my humble opinion. It's a great movie, but it's a terrible movie. So we need to enhance that. Frank, I think you're doing that on your podcasts, and Bob, you're doing that in some ways.
Thank you. I'm trying.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very difficult. There's so many tugs on young people, but that's critical, I think. As we go forward and writing it and leaving those memories, what you're doing, for all of you writing them or cookbooks, anything, videos, anything that our young ones can understand what gave them the opportunity in this country to succeed because of the courage of our forefathers coming here. I mean, some of them, half of them didn't speak, didn't read or write Italian. Never mind this language, English, when they came here. So to me, that's a push I try to make. I can't even get my grandchildren to get more interested. Some of them are, some of them won't, but we'll see.
I believe that started the generation before these kids, like my child. Yeah. I don't think they instilled that into my grandchildren.
Do you know La Storia Segreta? Have you read the book La Storia Segreta?
No, what is it?
What happened in World War II when Mussolini declared war on the United States, the Italians, 10,000 were put in a concentration camp then, and 600,000 Italians were profiled. Their licenses were taken away. They were moved out of their towns. Joe DiMaggio's father couldn't fish because they thought he was in touch with the enemy. Right. And so the Italians had 250,000 boys fighting.
That's the book.
And the Italians said, there it is, Una Storia Segreta. The Italians said, well, if it's not because of something we did, because we didn't do anything wrong, it must be because of who we are.
Right.
Well, they didn't speak Italian. I never heard Italian in my house, Frank. I heard dialect when they didn't want me to know what was going on.
Right.
Like someone was pregnant. Oh, God forbid I knew someone was pregnant. Ooh. So I didn't really hear nice Italian until I went to Italy the first time. Pronto, come va? Stato bene. So That's what happened. They moved away. My grandparents, my parents talk funny, look funny, dress funny. So it was the flight away from the immigrants. And we lost a lot of that. In that That's book, correct. You should read about when a story, The Secret Story. Read Gay Talese's stuff, Unto Thy Sons. That's a great book. It's 30, 40 years old. But and that's what happened. So getting that back has been very, very, very difficult to get the language back and so forth. That's what happened in this country. You talk about 1959 going to England. It was easy for your father. Try 1859 when the immigrant Italians came here. Oh, my God, there was so much prejudice against them. It was very difficult. So,
you know, during World War II, they came to our house. I'm one of 12 children. I'm like number 10. So my mother already had five children by 1942. And they came to our house and they wanted to lock my mother up and send her to the camp. And she said, yeah, but I'm going to take my kids. They never came back.
Yep. Terrible.
Wow.
There was nothing like what happened to the Japanese, of course, but it was not a pretty scene for the Italians and the Germans in this country, German-Americans. So anyway.
Sorry, can I just go back to the Italian language? So I went to Italian school. I went to Italian school twice a week to learn Italian. I mean, I already knew how to speak Italian, but it was all the written form.
Right.
And that's what my parents did to keep up the traditional language. And I did that from the age of 8 to 16.
Great.
Was there a lot of kids that did that?
Twice a week after school, Italian school for 2 hours. And my cousins did that. My sisters did it as well. There's a place, a school locally that offered this service, and we did it. We went. But my parents did make sure, same as my uncles, my aunties that came over from Italy to England, made sure that our culture was embedded in us. And
I think
my sister's children still do that, follow tradition, wine making, and we've kept it up. And I know you're saying that children nowadays don't understand some of the Italian culture. But I'm going to praise my family because we've kept it all up.
Good for you.
That's great. We
haven't, it's not dead. It's still alive.
You know, the name of my second book is Whatever Happened to Sunday Dinner? The name of my second book.
And what has happened to Sunday dinner?
Well, that's, you've got to buy the book. No. But it's kind of disappeared. Some families continue, but it's disappeared with the grandparents and the parents and people moving away. I mean, I have kids all over the country. Who's going to have Sunday dinner every year?
I don't want to say it's not just Italians, because it's the people that we're living in.
There's Bob's grandparents.
That's my grandfather. That's an enemy alien.
Yeah, there.
Whose grandfather is this?
That's my grandfather.
Who are you? I don't see Frank.
So he's registered.
No, Bob.
As an enemy. I'm sorry.
They registered him as an enemy.
But him and my grandmother.
So when did he come over?
They came in 1915.
Oh, 1915, okay.
Yeah, but they had to register as enemy aliens.
Everybody had to if they were not in the process.
If they weren't in the process
of naturalization. Yeah.
Well, that was during World War One, right?
No, World War II.
No, it's World War II, 1942.
February 17th, 1942.
Yeah, 42. I'm so sorry. Okay.
That's the document,
And it was only rescinded, by the way, Roosevelt, who put it in, because there was a great backlash of people that would not vote for Roosevelt because of this.
Well, so, he said the Italians stabbed him in the back. I mean, his cartoon saying the Italians stabbed him in the back. Yeah. Roosevelt said that.
That's the stuff that they don't tell the kids, right? This is the stuff that people don't know about.
You know what? They don't even get to World War II.
No, they don't. No.
They don't get to World War II. We've changed our curriculum to, instead of 1 year of U.S. history, which was probably everybody here had to take 1 year of U.S. history. Now we have 2 years of U.S. history, and we still don't get to World War II. I forgot just where I heard it. Oh, it was stop. Shh, shh. People will give 3 days to the Civil War. I mean, that's how the rapid pace that people have to take. So it's. But I do want to say something because I'm from the North End. We do have an Italian school. We have a Catholic parochial school, K-8, which also teaches Italian. And we have 2 churches that have Italian masses, and 1 church, which was the Irish church, is in English. But I think the North End is doing a really good job of keeping up the traditions. But the biggest problem, as Ed said, is people leave. People leave. It's a diaspora to wherever they go on. And it's hard to get people back once they've also, as my mother said, oh my God, you're not marrying an Irish person. No, mine, he's not Irish. A lot of people just became American. I don't hold with that, but I believe I'm Italian, have first generation Italian. But I think it's a sad thing. But the North End, and, if you've got people that are living in that kind of a conclave, then it can be maintained.
When you think of the big cities and you think of the areas where there were the Italians, they were the last ones to leave the area as all the big cities started to turn. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's still a lot of the Italians down in South Philly, but nothing like when I was a little girl.
No. Yeah,
but they're still trying to hold on to that section.
Yes.
Hey, so
this isn't from 90% to 42% in the North End Italian.
So before we wrap up, I'd like to go around the table and just ask everybody if you had one piece of advice for somebody who's wants to start writing or is not sure about writing, what would it be? So
if I could, Becky, start.
Sure.
What would you say, Becky?
I thought Frank wanted to begin.
I'm just going to go around the screen.
Okay, we'll go around. I really think that it can be very simple, and it would be if you start, if your grandparents are alive, to just start with your grandparents. And similar to what Ed said, there's some basic, just simple questions you can ask about family and begin just getting, even if it's all to say, hi, I'm 16. What were you like when you were 16? What was life like? Even something simple to tape record or to video record the responses, and that will begin gathering stories. And so it'll in little bits, it'll grow through just conversations.
Yeah, good. Josephine, how about you?
Well, for me, I did, my second book is Life's Journey, and it's about my grandmother, how she came on an arranged marriage to South Philadelphia to marry Raphael. And just digging and finding that all the history is how I just flowed right into writing a book about her entire life from when she was born. I went to her town, Atalia, and found her birth certificate in the community center. They had it in the big leather book from 1881. And the more you think about it and search, the more you have to write about your family history, and it keeps leading you to more and more and more things that I never even thought of as a child, and hearing stories from my mother. But writing is just a lot of fun. It's finding out who you are.
Yeah. Frank?
I was going to say, listen to everybody. I'm no expert with this at all, but what everybody says. But all I was going to add to this was just, if you have an inkling for this, to learn some Italian, the language, just do it. Do it. Don't wait. Life is too short. Do it. You want to learn about stuff in Italy, internet, to learn where the family's from, the region, anything. Just do it.
Right.
Ed? Yeah, I would write about your family. Just write. Just get a journal like this. I write in this every day, every single day. And if you need a prompt, get a picture, an old picture of your grandparents or your parents, and describe the picture and tell a story about that picture. And that'll get you going.
Peggy?
Yeah, well, here's one of the pictures that got me going. I don't know.
Great.
That's who is that, family. Peggy?
Huh? There's a story.
Who is that?
That's my mother.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Very pretty.
Yeah, so there's the story right there.
Yeah. Is that her Holy Communion?
That was Holy Communion when she came from Italy. She was the communion was here.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice. And nice. Mirella?
I would just say write what you know.
Right. Was,
yeah. You know, write from your heart and write from what
and
you
it'll
know.
Come out.
And Mirella?
Oh, sorry. Okay. I'm very impulsive. So I get an idea into my head and I think, right, I'm going to do it. If anyone wants to write a story about their family and have doubts that it's not going to work, just try it, give it a go, and, you know, just write from the heart and describe everything, show the emotions they felt. And do it. You've got nothing to lose. Just give it a go.
Yeah, I would agree. And yeah. I would say, you know, besides trying it, there are people out there they'll help you. You know,
yeah,
if you have a question,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We all got help in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't be shy on Facebook group or email, or just go out there and find somebody, because there's plenty of people out there that want to help.
Yeah.
Lots of books and lots of books to read about.
And you know who gave me a lot of information about my family from Italy were two Italians that live in Abruzzi. Mm-hmm. I accidentally met them on the computer, and they gave and sent me tons of information all the time. Yeah. Even about my family that came from Italy to America, they knew more than I did. So there are people out there that'll help you.
Yeah, so this is a good question. Don't worry about who's interested in it.
Don't worry.
You have to be interested in it.
I like this one.
Let's do it.
Thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you all. This has been great. And hopefully we get people to write their own stories.
Nice meeting all of you.
Nice meeting you. Thank you, Bob.
We're calling Morellas for meatballs. We'll see you at Morellas for meatballs.
Yes. If you're local, you can come round for Sunday lunch.
Okay, we'll be there.
We'll be there.
See you all. Thanks, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Nice meeting you.